Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are here joining us today as we talk about financial matters, both myself and my co-host. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And glad you are here tuning in to us today, whether you're listening to us on a terrestrial radio, like the old school radio, AM station somewhere, or through a podcast, which is becoming more and more. I think we have more podcast listeners now than we have.
Conventional.
But anyway, we're glad you are. So whenever you're listening to us.
But if you're listening conventionally, you can always listen to our podcast. Just go to our website, yes. HansonMcLean.com, and download.
If you'd like to join the program, whether you're listening to this on the radio or any other time through a podcast, we'd still love to take your call. And we can, if you're listening to us like for a podcast some other time, we can always schedule a call at some time in the future. So some of the calls we'll take on Saturday, Saturday morning during broadcast times. Other times we'll schedule a time during the week and take calls as well. So love to take your call.
And what number would you call, Scott, if you wanted to do that?
And feel free to be anonymous on some issues.
Make up your name.
If you're worried about that sort of thing.
Both your friends will hear you.
1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program here. Both your friends. what are you going to put a dig on them? So I said, listen, now you're ripping on our self-deprecating humor is fine. Not listener-deprecating humor.
I'm not allowed to do that.
I don't know. Maybe it's crossing the line a bit.
Okay, I apologize.
Y'all laughing. You're proud of yourself. 1-888-2-HANSON if you went to Radio 101 school, it'd probably be one of the first things.
I didn't, though.
Oh, okay. At least you're not angry like so many are. Anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON. No, I did not either. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Also, yeah, we're going to go to the calls here in a second. But we've got a great program today. Not only some good calls lined up, but we're going to talk about if you still have a pension, you're going to be retiring and have a pension. We're going to talk about some of the pension options and some things to consider around that. And while most people who are entering the workforce today or younger people in the workforce don't have a pension, there are still many people that are going into retirement. Of course, if you work for the government, most likely you have a traditional pension, a variety of forms of government. And there are still, if you work for an old line company, you might be of the age still that even though they changed the pension for...
You still have to make some decisions.
Yes, and we'll talk about that. So anyway, let's go to the calls now. We'll start off. So we're going to talk about that during this program. But let's go to some calls. We're going to start off in Sacramento, and we're going to talk with Danny. Danny, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Pat. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us.
Great show. You're welcome. No problem. First time on your show calling in. So.
Oh, good.
I just have a question. It's a rather simple one. I'm probably rather self-explanatory, but just thought I'd ask, because you don't know unless you do ask. How would the tariffs that the president is imposing on China affect people's retirement and so forth and so on?
So
you can get some Republican pundit on there, big Trump supporter. He'll say, hey, well, it's going to be good for your retirement account, and you can get a Democratic.
So let's start with the premise that your retirement account is heavily invested in equities or stocks, U.S.-based.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have to start with that premise.
Okay.
Right? Because if your premise...
If it's in CDs...
It's going to have no effect.
Unless it's inflationary.
Yes. So... Right. Let's start with a premise of what this retirement account looks like in most retirement accounts. are overweighted, let's just say, greater than 50% equities in the U.S.
So here's the interesting thing about sometimes what might be good for one segment of the economy or one individual might be bad for the other or for the whole, right? That's just
right. Reality.
Like when we see someone who's got a phenomenal pension from a county and they're getting 90% of their pay at age 50, we're like,
it's good for
that's
them.
That's great for you as a taxpayer. Oh, yeah. It's bad for me, right? So, but I certainly
Right, exactly.
So here's the challenge, I think, from a particularly on a shorter term basis with tariffs. One is if you're a company that has exports, obviously, and we end up into some sort of trade war and our exports get slapped with some tariffs, suddenly our goods in overseas now are much more expensive. So we would assume that that would have a negative impact on our sales, which would have a negative impact on our earnings, which in turn would have a negative impact on the share price, which is, I think we saw some of the volatility in the stock market around when some of these when there's more concern about the tariffs, there tends to be some more volatility. But there's been lots of bad news the last couple of years. Right.
But on the other hand, if you're competing with a imported product from China and they impose tariffs on those imported products, it's good for you, that company.
If you're selling some widget or something that China is selling, bringing in here and selling less expensively.
Yeah. So let's say, let's use the real life example of steel. So if I'm manufacturing steel in the United States, I'm all for tariffs. Put the tariffs on the
China's
Chinese
steel. Overbuilt. They've got a glut of steel and they're
bringing it to market.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
But at the same time, right? So that's good for the steel companies. But let's say I'm in a manufacturing business and I'm building automobiles.
Oh, boy.
Right? Or I'm building buildings.
Yeah.
The price of steel is going to go up immediately in the mere threat of tariffs.
Well, we threw some tariffs on lumber from Canada a year or two ago. Price of lumber went up dramatically on building homes.
So how's it?
Which was interesting. We're talking about we have a housing shortage here and a crisis for homeless. At the same time, we throw up tariff on.
So how's it affect? How's it affect the retirement account? Equities is really what the question is.
Well, maybe a better question is this, because it's going to be there's multiple effects. The question is, what should an investor do? Particularly, how old are you, Danny?
I am 43.
Okay, so 43. So you're talking about money you're not going to touch for 20 years. This thing's going to blow over way before you ever retire.
So you shouldn't change a thing.
Okay.
Right?
Oh,
so if you're 100% equities in your portfolio, which you should be at 43, you should be 100% equities, 75 to 80% of it U.S., the rest international. You shouldn't worry about it. And save as much money as you possibly can. Save as much money into that 401k as you possibly can. My wife and I had this discussion. So thanks for the call, Danny.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You're
welcome. No problem. Great show.
Thanks.
So I'm 55. I came out of college in my early 20s. I was married in our 20s. And the first job that had a 401k available to us, my first job out of college, and my wife's first job, we started putting the maximum amount that we could into a company 401k. And the reason being is I was used to living on nothing to begin with, and I figured I wouldn't miss it. And I have continued the maximum to this date. I am surprised by the size, and it's been 100% equities the whole time. I am surprised by the size of the 401k balance.
And you're a financial advisor, and you can do the math.
And I could do the math. But my wife and I were having this discussion the other day, and then I had it with my children as an example, which is, listen, and you say, well, you make a lot of money. Yeah, above average, but I've always put the maximum that was allowed me by tax law to put into the company.
A lot of times it might have been 15%.
Correct.
Because for not that many years ago, it was limited as a percentage of your employer.
That's right.
And the employer, it wasn't that many years ago until the employer opened those percentages way up, and then it's more of a numerical amount as opposed to a percentage.
But the point being is that it was a long period of time, it was consistent, and it was 100% stocks the whole time. And
well,
it doesn't take much. It's not rocket science. It's not complicated.
But and back to what Danny brought up about looking at some of these there might even be microtrends, macrotrends. And what impact, what, so the question, what am I supposed to do with this information? Here's the bottom line. Depending on which study you're looking at, 70 to 80% of professional money managers can't outperform an index, an S&P 500 index, for example. So a stock manager, a stock picker, someone's a stock picker, has a whole team of analysts all day long. They look at the ticker tape. They've got monitors all over the place, running all kinds of calculations to favor this company I should favor. Oh, the Chinese tariffs. Let's buy more of this. Let's sell this, etc. They do all these things.
Yeah.
The vast majority of them can't outperform just the index of let's just buy the whole basket and let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
So if that's true for the professional money manager, how is the average individual who's still working towards retirement going to outperform?
And this tariff stuff, it's going to have some short-term effects on the economy, but a lot of it's noise. And I've heard trade wars. These aren't trade wars. You'll know when we're in a trade war.
We're not going to get in a trade war.
Yeah.
Not a real trade. Nobody.
No.
It's like we're not going to get in a nuclear war.
It's in no one's interest.
Correct. It's a little.
Yeah.
These are a little like maneuver. No different than their, how we move our warships periodically around. Just a little showing force. Isn't it?
Yeah.
All political noise.
Both sides.
Some people get really hot and excited about it, but I don't know. You can if you want, or you can get on with your life. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And we're not trying to not saying that there's not some risk there and not.
There is some short-term risk there.
Of course. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Let's go to San Francisco and talk with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about Social Security.
All right.
If a person has a existing government pension, what formula does the Social Security Administration use to modify their benefits?
So
you're thinking there's like a simple formula.
Yeah. Unless you have how long have you paid into Social Security?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I didn't start. I've been paying into it, I guess, since I was maybe about 15 years old when I had a part-time job.
Got it.
But I didn't get my 40 quarters till after I retired.
So you have more than 30 years in Social Security.
Yeah, but I only have about 40 quarters.
Yeah, that's right. So he's totally vested in Social Security.
Got it. Do you have more than 30 years in Social Security, paid into Social Security? Forget everything else.
Sure, over time, part, you know, here and there.
Okay.
Right.
So if you have over 30 years paid into Social Security, there is a great chance that there is no offset in your in the Social Security benefit against your government pension.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do I find out?
30 years of contribution.
30 years of contribution.
How do I find out all the laws that apply?
Well, first, actually, the Social Security Administration has a pretty decent website.
Okay.
Yeah, ssa.gov.
.gov.
Yeah. Matter of fact, that's where I go to get a lot of information. When I've got a question on Social Security, it's the first place I go. They actually have a pretty good website. Sometimes you got to know what you're looking for, and it links to lots of stuff. But if you spend a little time there, you can get some pretty good information. How old are you, Dan? Jim?
I'm 74.
74. So are you receiving Social Security now?
Well, my benefits are zero because I have to pay into Medicare.
How long have you been?
My net benefits are zero.
How long have you been receiving Social Security?
Since 2006.
So is the question really here? You think you're getting shortchanged, and you want to figure out why you're getting shortchanged?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
there's a possibility for that.
Yeah, you can ask for an appeal to the Social Security Administration.
Yeah, I would go that route.
Because we were thinking it was what was going to happen to you in the future. You're asking the question, which is, how do I check myself to make sure that I'm getting paid fairly?
Yeah, I'd ask for an appeal.
Exactly. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And then they're going to have to dig in and actually justify why. So you're receiving some benefit. What are you receiving, $400 or $500 a month?
No.
Well, I was receiving $6.40 net till this year.
But forget about the Medicare. Forget about the Medicare. How much was the gross amount?
$200 and
Yeah.
Okay.
$240 a month,
got
I think it is, plus in that area.
And do you think you've had more than 30 years in paying into
Well, even that, it depends on how much she's paid in, too. So.
Now, when you say 30 years, do you think, does that mean paying in every single year, or does that mean
cumulative?
Cumulative. Oh, absolutely.
30 calendar years.
30 calendar years. Ask for an appeal.
Okay.
Yeah, it is the one. There's a change when you have 30 years for the offset.
Yeah.
Okay.
So ask for an appeal.
Okay. Great.
All right, Jim.
Well, thank you
good
for
luck.
The information.
Yeah, all right. Good luck. Appreciate it. Yeah. It is a complicated. What do they call that? It's not the
windfall elimination.
Windfall elimination. WEP.
The windfall elimination. And quite frankly, you listen to Jim. He's crushing it with that windfall. Over $200.
We don't know what his pension was.
It's probably pretty good.
Anyway. And Social Security can be complicated. We have workshops on Social Security. We also have on our website at HanselMcLane.com. There's a webinar on
our workshops on Social Security are the most well attended workshops that we put on. We close almost every one of them.
Yeah,
they fill up so fast.
Well, you know why that is, Pat. It's funny. We're talking internally at Hanson McLane, and like, wow, it's because everyone has to make a decision on. Everyone is impacted on it, and everyone has to make a decision of when you're going to elect to receive it.
Everyone.
So people are forced to make a decision. The other areas that we believe would highly benefit from increased knowledge and from education,
they're
not forced to make the decision, they may not bother to come to them. As an example, maybe it's an example or not, we have a new series of workshops, our Retire Beware workshops that Hanson McLane is putting out. And during these workshops, the whole idea here is to arm people with information and knowledge so that they can better protect themselves from financial products, processes, schemes, etc., that could be detrimental to their retirement, that could derail their retirement. And Hanson McLane, you know, over the last 25 years we've been doing this, we've seen a number of people whose retirements have been impaled.
Oh, terribly, terribly, irretrievably.
As a result of
irretrievably
things that were done to them,
absolutely.
That had they had more knowledge
and oftentimes otherwise highly intelligent people.
Correct. Well, you can be a brilliant in a lot of areas and not be that financially literate. And we understand why some people just don't find much interest in it. Totally get it. But you need to
at least at a minimum know what to need to stay away from.
Yes. So that's why we have this round of workshops, Retiree Beware. I didn't know what we're going to fill out on. It's the first time we've done it, but I'll put money on it that we're not going to have as many people come to us on Social Security because everyone has to make a decision on Social Security. And this is the sort of thing people are like, it's probably not going to happen to me. I mean, we have a good interest. We have a lot of people signed up already, but.
We gave them, I gave one to a, we just put it on our, invited a bunch of clients to one. And invited their friends, and it was well received. So this is called Retiree Beware, and you can register at HansonMcLane.com in the Sacramento region. It's the week of April the 29th.
This coming week.
So it's Auburn, Rancho Cordova, Roseville, and Sacramento.
Yeah, I'm going to
so
take a little
four
more time. Tuesdays in Auburn, Wednesdays in Rancho Cordova, Thursdays in Roseville, Saturday we're in Sacramento again.
Yeah.
This week coming up. The next week, the week of May 6th, Tuesday we're in Danville in the Bay Area. We're in the Bay Area all week of May 6th. Tuesday, we're in Danville. Wednesday, we're in Petaluma. Thursday, we're in Pleasanton. Saturday, we're in Burlingame. The week after that, the week of May 13th, on that Wednesday, the 15th of May, we'll be in Cherry Creek, the Denver region. Cherry Creek, Wednesday night. Highlands Ranch, Thursday. Broomfield, Saturday. So if you'd like to join one of these, just go to HansonMcLane.com, and you'll see something on our webpage right there. It shows you how to register. It's easy peasy. And we don't charge for these, so it's...
You do have to register them.
Yeah. We don't charge, but we're not going to serve some fancy steak dinner either. It's just, we're not. That's not.
You're going to have to go to those guys that are going to sell you the grossly overpriced commission product if you want the free steak dinner.
You want that really fancy steakhouse? They're usually trying to sell you something.
Actually, you know, it's interesting. So I gave this workshop and I asked the question. I said, you probably all receive invitations to these steak dinners and where they, these two ladies up front, they said, they raised their hand, and I said, yeah. And they said, we go twice a month to these steak dinners. They're great. And I said, well, do you have an investment advisory? And she said, oh, yeah, Pat, your firm manages our money. And I said, why do you go? And she said, because they're great. It's free, and they serve great wine. Well, and
the great wine. You don't want to usually make an investment decision when you've got wine involved, just to let you know, right? It's probably a thing.
And by and large, they sell either non-traded REITs, non-traded business development companies, or indexed annuities. Big commission products. Big commission products.
Which is how they afford this.
And we'll talk about this at the Retire Beware.
To see you there. Just go to HansonMcLean.com for information on that. So we mentioned the top of the program we want to talk about, and we're going to get back to the calls. And if you want to be part of the program, I'd love to take your call, 1-888-2-HANSON. But we set the top of the program, we want to talk about some pension options. Because if you are at retirement and you need to make a decision on your pension, it's probably the largest financial decision you'll ever make.
That and the decision on how to take Social Security are big, big decisions, which is a form of deciding how to take a pension.
Yes. So you work for a company X amount of years, and typically what happens, you go to retire, and they'll say, all right, if you want to take a single life option, and let's just use like $1,000 as an example. So here's your pension, a single life, you get $1,000 a month. You die tomorrow, the pension stops. If you don't like that option, you can take another option. Maybe you take $900 a month.
You die tomorrow.
And your spouse will receive $450 a month, half that amount.
Right.
Or another option, you take $850, you die tomorrow, your spouse continues to receive $850 for the rest of their life.
So, or you take a lump sum.
And some say option to give you a lump sum.
Or certain counties, municipalities, or states, we'll have nine different options. We'll have nine different options to choose from.
Yeah. So, but when you're considering this, some of the factors you need to weigh into is because when you're taking a reduced pension to protect a spouse, it's a form of life insurance, right?
Correct. I'm actually giving up something today to provide more benefit
economic benefit at my death.
At my death. That's cheery, isn't it?
Well, that's we're all going to die. So, some people will push that. Take the highest option and go buy a life insurance policy because it's less expensive. We think that's buoy.
Is that still being peddled? Is that still,
we had still someone pushed? Call I think last year with that.
That someone had
pension maximization. They call.
Oh, I remember that. So it's still out there. It's not as
90% of the time. It's a bad idea.
Well, at least
at least 90%. Every once in a while you find it. But here's some things that you need to consider. First of all, are there any other assets or any other income sources that would stop
at your death,
in addition to the pension? So
Social Security?
What changes are going to be at Social Security? Are there inheritances, perhaps, that maybe you had a wealthy family, and if you were no longer there, maybe your spouse wouldn't be a recipient of that?
If you predeceased, the inheritance.
That's something to consider as well. Are there any other, do you have obligations from a previous marriage that could have an impact? Are your assets going to be going to your spouse or to somebody else upon your death? Maybe there's some separate assets.
Yeah.
But then also to consider is, once you're gone, what are the income needs of your spouse going to be? Is there a mortgage still on the house?
The surviving spouse.
The surviving. Is there a mortgage on the house that needs to be paid? And there's a number of factors that to consider.
Especially if the other spouse, if your spouse has a pension, does it have a pop-up provision on your pension, on their pension? A pop-up provision says, I'm going to give up some of my benefit, but if my spouse predeceases me, my pension gets elevated up as if my spouse never existed.
And so there's no right answer here. So if you're retiring and
wait, Scott, why is there no right answer? Because in the eyes of the pension itself, every selection you make is exactly the same to them actuarially.
Big enough pool of people, yeah.
Actuarially.
Some people are going to get hit by a truck the next day. Some people are going to live to 100.
And the pension provider doesn't really care which direction you go, one way or the other. Because to them, it's the same dollar amount that they have to set aside in your name.
And the right answer will only be known in the future.
Of when you die And when your spouse dies.
Yes. Then we'll know what the right decision was.
So if you know those answers.
Then it makes it easy.
It makes it easy, which is pretty macabre.
But really, if you're in this situation, this is really a time when it would make sense for you to meet with somebody, a good certified financial planner, help you map through this, think about the other decisions. And just because the person in the office next to you is choosing one option, and you might have even started working together the same day, 30 years ago or whatever, does not mean it's the right decision for you because of these factors that we discussed. And, of course, your health.
Oh, the health is a big driver. Life expectancy is a big, big driver on how you select these benefits.
Yeah. So, I mean, even so, I would argue that it would make sense to get a physical. If you have a large pension before you make a decision, get a physical to double check before you
It's not a bad idea.
I calculated for someone recently, their pension was worth about $1.6 million. Hey, we got to take a break here at Hanson McLean. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Glad you are with us on this weekend.
I'm Pat McLean.
Scott Hanson.
There we go.
And if you want to be part of the program, you have a question for us, like to call the show, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
And you can actually call any time if you're listening to a podcast. If you call that number at any time, we can actually schedule a phone call so you can get your question answered.
Yes, if you'd like.
So we set aside time every 2, 3, 4 weeks where we come into the studio for 2 or 3 hours and just take phone calls from people that are podcast listeners.
Yeah.
Or regular listeners that can't call in. I'm actually not quite certain how it works. I just know if you're a regular listener on terrestrial radio and you can get on when you called in, we'll make it convenient.
I didn't know what you mean by they can't get on.
Well, sometimes it's too many calls.
Yeah, I understand that part now.
We try to make it convenient.
You know, it's also been a funny thing, and we have calls we're going to get to in a second here, but 25 years of this program, and there are some weeks that with so many calls, it couldn't even come close to getting to them all. And other weeks, quiet.
Yeah.
And we got to the point where it's like, who knows?
We can't figure it out.
Doesn't matter.
The weather, my personality.
That
let's go to, we're going to talk to Eric in Northern California. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Yes. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's all I have. Is it echoing?
Oh, no, you're fine if that's all you got.
Okay, my question is in regard to a subject you had last weekend. I listen on every weekend, and I couldn't get through last weekend, which is funny. You're just talking about
that. Uh-huh.
And the question I had was, I'd like to revisit, if you could, was the regarding student loans. It was the other segment on student loans. And there was one point that you made. It was basically you're saying it's never, never a good idea for a parent or a grandparent to co-sign on a student loan. And that
I don't know if we quite said that, but don't jeopardize your retirement and be very careful before you co-sign on a student loan.
So give us your situation.
Okay. The situation is it's kind of unique. My son apparently went to my mom back in 2009 and asked for a co-signer. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't know this had happened until my mother passed away 2 years ago. And I was the executor of her trust, and I was settling everything through, and I started getting her mail and going through her files, and I saw this student loan for $15,000, which is a co-signer on. Since then, all of her estate has been settled and distributed according to her trust, but there's still this lingering co-signer student loan that she's on that I keep getting mail forwarded to me for. And I'm trying to figure out, is she still liable for that as a co-signer? Should I send them information about her death? Or how does that work?
Is your son making payments on the loan?
Yeah, he's regularly making payments. She gets statements just because she's a co-signer.
Got it. Well, your son is responsible, number one, for that loan.
Let's assume he defaulted.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
They could go back to your mom's estate and then say, well, who was the trustee or who was the executor of the estate, and come to you and say, well, you shouldn't have distributed that money. You owed us, you know, you're on the hook here.
Would they do that, though?
Yeah, would they do that?
It's $15,000.
Well, your son's making the payments.
Right.
And is your son able to make the payments?
Yeah, he's able to make the payments. A while back, while she was still alive, we tried to get her off of the loan, you know, by submitting paperwork.
Yeah, but they're not going to. Why would they take her off the loan?
Yeah, that didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, think about that. If you were the person that loaned the mumble,
you're so an older woman who's got plenty of assets, or a young kid who's got nothing.
Yeah. So if your son's making the loan payments, what are you worried about? I don't understand.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get the mail to stop coming.
Oh, you can't. Or, don't worry about that.
Or should I inform them that she's deceased or just not?
Yeah, tell them. There's no downside in saying that she's deceased.
They might have some policy where they'll just take her off. Who knows?
There's no downside. There's no downside in saying she's deceased. How big was the estate?
A couple $100,000 in her home and all the other stuff.
I think you're borrowing trouble.
Yeah. Not only that, because of the amount, let's assume for a moment. Let's just assume worst case. Your son quit making the payments. They go through the hassle. They say, aha, there's a cosigner here. Let's go after the cosigner.
And they look at it and they go.
The cosigner's deceased. It's $15,000. If it was $1.5 million, they'd say, let's go after the estate here. Let's figure out who the executor was, trustee was on this, and let's see if we can recapture. But for $15,000, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
They would take more.
Yeah. It costs the same amount to go after $1.5 million as it does for $15,000.
So they're not.
So the economics behind it say, why would they even bother? And by the way, she was a co-signer. Your son is still responsible for the payments.
So they're not going to discharge it for anything.
They're not going to discharge it on him for whatever. Yeah. So you can let the company know she's deceased, or you know, if it were
just
me,
throw away the mail.
I would just throw the mail away.
Keep on throwing away.
I don't know. Or just send them a copy of the death certificate. Make it easy. I would.
Yeah, what I've been doing is I've just been writing return to sender no longer at this address and just throw it back in the mail.
You have a death certificate? You can just. I agree with Scott.
I think you're borrowing trouble too, Eric. I got to tell you.
What's that?
Send him a copy of the death certificate and say, please don't mail here any longer.
Yeah.
And be done with it.
And
I wouldn't worry
call
about
it a day.
I wouldn't worry about that at all.
I think you're borrowing trouble.
Don't worry. Don't worry about that. Yeah. Probably the prudent thing to do here, and one might argue legally, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not trying to give you legal advice here, but the prudent thing would have been to set aside $15,000 in the estate, have it set aside until the loan was discharged.
Assuming he knew about it. The assumption is
he didn't know about it. Yeah. That would be the prudent thing. Because, so anyway, Eric, appreciate the call. Anytime you're an executor or a trustee of an estate, I mean, part of your responsibility, you do have responsibilities. You're accepting responsibility. Part of that responsibility is to make sure that any creditors are taken care of.
Yes.
And if someone's a co-signer on a loan, they are agreeing to saying, if that party doesn't make the payments, I'm going to come behind and make sure they make good. So while it may not be a financial payment due today, it could certainly be one in the future. It is a potential liability.
So I've got a little story there, Scott. So my daughter, who is she'll be a...
At Hanson McLean, we've seen all kinds of weird things over the years.
So my daughter, she will be a senior next year in college, and she is moving in with three other roommates into a house. And they're all four of the college students will be responsible for their payment. Well, the landlord will only accept one guarantor, one person that will guarantee that payment is being made. So the other parents said, I don't want to be the guarantor. I don't want to be the guarantor of the whole monthly payment for a 12-month lease. So I'm not going to sign it. And so I said, will you be a guarantor on your daughter's portion of the lease? That's the question I asked. And they all said, oh, yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with being the guarantor for my daughter's portion. Let's call it $700 a month for the payment. But I'm not going to be the guarantor for everyone. Easy enough.
So Pat, let me finish what happened. Pat went ahead and was the guarantor for the entire lease and had a little document that he each signed guaranteeing to you.
Their payment for the length of the lease, for their amount.
Did you actually have them draft a little?
I actually doing it ourselves.
Who's drafting it?
I'm taking the original guarantor lease and actually just drafting the document. Is there a better way? Sure, I should probably have an attorney do it.
Yeah, but it's you're looking at risk return here, correct?
Correct.
It's
exactly.
Not one is $700 a month for 9 months or whatever. It is.
Yeah, so it's $8,000, okay. And it's probably not going to.
And it's a private school that these families are footing the bill for their daughters to begin with,
correct.
So they all have some sort of money. Or their kids.
We the assumption, and that probably isn't going to happen 3 months into the lease when someone leaves, or a month. It'll probably happen 6, 7, 8 months into it, where we get stuck with a little bit if it happens at all.
Yeah.
And I know.
And if someone owes you $700, you're not, like you said, previous caller, it costs the same whether to go after $1.5 million or $15,000. You're probably not going to work that hard to go after $700.
So my daughter said to me.
So what's the point of having a big legal contract draft?
That's correct. Yes, and my daughter said to me, my daughter asked the same question, who's going to draft this lease? Who's going to draft the documents? And I said, you and I are. You're going to take the original guarantor contract, and we're going to go through it together, and we're going to customize it to your friend's parents, and then they're going to sign on. She said, what happens if they don't pay? And I said, oh, it'll be a small enough number. We'll end up in small claims court. But the reality is they're likely to pay knowing that they signed this. They're likely to pay. I'm not taking their word for it that they're going to pay, and it's not a big deal. It will
they're
take
probably likely to pay. Regardless,
well,
one would hope.
I don't know these people.
I understand.
I've never met these people. I've never even met.
Now, if I were your financial advisor, I would warn you of the risks of, still the risk of doing this. But the fact that the reality is, look, we all make decisions. And the student loan thing's an interesting thing because here you love your daughter. You want what's best for your daughter. Housing's an issue, right? Where your daughter's going to be living is a big issue.
Oh, yes.
Particularly as a dad, I mean, you care, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, I told my wife that. I said, I wouldn't really care so much where my son lives.
Of course not.
Right?
Well, different things happen to women. Right?
Yes.
So I've got a daughter in college, too. Actually, just about to graduate. Yeah. But when they find some good roommates and it's like, that's a big deal for it.
Makes life easier. So the point,
on this
risk-return ratio.
On the student loan issue... and it is that time of year we talked about a couple weeks back on a student loan stuff. It just, you need to be really careful before you co-sign.
Yes. We had a lady call the show a couple years ago. The daughter died.
It was co-signer.
It was co-sign. Daughter died. I mean, tragic. Tragic.
Well, I just heard this week driving, I was listening to NPR and they were talking about opioid crisis and then. They're interviewing some parents whose daughter had passed away, and the guy said he got a bill from some student loan something, and he sent him back a death certificate. And I heard the call, and I didn't, as a financial advisor, listened to the, and I thought, oh gosh, I hope that hope they weren't guaranteeing the loan because
could
be tragic.
Good
kid dead of an overdose. Yeah, so
yeah.
Just be careful.
Yeah,
yeah,
man,
that sounds really sounds
cheery.
Sorry. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and where we talk about financial stuff. And anyway, this is the part of our program where you're going to
turn. Well, based on that last conversation, we should call Black Cloud Radio. It's just not cheery. That was depressing.
That last piece I just mentioned.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we're talking about kids dying. Yeah, that is depressing.
All right, let's move on.
But
you tried to move on.
I brought us back. I know.
I apologize.
But look, the reality
it's
is.
The Irish in me.
The reality is.
Be careful when you co-sign. Careful when you sign anything. When my when my father went into a nursing care home facility, there's five kids in our family, and I wasn't there when they admitted him. And so I just said to everyone in my family, don't sign anything. They're going to ask you to sign some sort of documents. Don't sign anything. I will sign everything after I read the contracts and I understand what my obligation of signing is for. But otherwise, don't sign anything.
All right. There
people tell you not to worry about it. Don't sign it. Read it. Auto lease, read it. There we go.
Well, some people don't understand what they're reading.
Try to read it.
You can't read every document. You read the ones where you
there's risk return ratios.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, that what my and the point I was going to lead into is when you're looking at your own financial life, looking at your retirement, is figuring out one of the part of we use a 7 personal decision point process at Hanson McLean, and one of that has to do with risk,
yep.
And it's risk mitigation. And what areas of your life could there be some risk? And oftentimes it's these small things that people don't think about that can pop up. And derail a retirement.
Yep.
And that, like, co-signing a grandchild's loan might be a great thing, but they rake up some debt, and suddenly it impacts you and...
And your retirement.
Yeah. Let's go to Rio Vista, California, talk with Robert. Robert, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm 62, and I'm four years from getting my Social Security, and I'm debating whether I should get it earlier because I'm afraid it's not going to be there. I have a pension now, and I really don't need it, but I'm afraid that if I wait, it's going to be gone.
All right, well, a couple.
What do you think?
Are you retired now?
Yes.
And how's your health?
It's fine.
You're in perfect health.
Perfect.
Well, I have an old man's health. I'm not 20 anymore.
But so you can take Social Security, Robert, anytime from now until 70. If you're not working, there's really nothing magical about 66, your normal retirement age, 66 in a couple months, whatever it is for you, because you can elect it in any point in time between now and age 70.
So, and what is your income now?
It's probably about $80,000.
And are you married?
No.
Okay. So let's talk about this.
And is that all? How much is that? Is from a pension?
Can you say that again?
The $80,000 you're retired. How much of that $80,000 is coming from a pension?
Oh, all of it.
And does the pension have any cost of living adjustment to it?
Is it a state or county pension?
Well, it's a private pension.
Okay.
A big one, and then there's a very small county pension which does have a cost of adjustment.
Got it.
Which is only about 10%.
I would wait on this. To start taking the Social Security.
If you told me it was a state or county pension with a cost of living, I would actually start kind of, and you're single, I'd actually kind of start saying, why are we waiting on the Social Security?
Well, what would you do with the money, Robert? Are you saving any of this $80,000, or are you spending every dime of it that you're taking in right now?
I'm saving some of it.
How much are you saving? $2,000 a month?
No.
Probably about $1,000 a month.
Okay. Yeah, I'd wait. I'd wait to take the Social Security.
Well, my concern was with all this talk about the government budget, how Social Security is not going to be there because
Social Security
they're going to do away with it,
or
they're not going to fulfill the promises that that they made.
Yeah.
To
some of it, you get some all kinds of different media reports and fake news and everything else. But if you go on, you can go on the Social Security's website and you can actually look at some studies. The trust fund is scheduled to be depleted by about 2030. So. About 12 years from now, that date's actually starting to come a little closer.
And if they were to take benefits away, who would they take them away from? It wouldn't be across the board.
No.
You'd probably start with the highest incomes first and say, anyone with incomes over...
Maybe start by taxing it more. Maybe a surtax.
There you go.
We've already seen it with Medicare Part B.
Well, we saw it with Social Security. So
yeah.
25 years ago, Social Security wasn't taxed, and now they can tax up to 85% of it.
But
it's ordinary income. But your income of $80,000 tells me I don't believe that you're at risk for losing that benefit.
Who knows?
Well, that's a good point.
Who knows? But it's still 12 years out. Here's what you need to... So The thing that's in an interesting position is you're single.
You don't need the money.
So you can wait. You can wait till normal retirement age. You can wait till 70. It'd be even more.
You could wait till 2 months from now.
So the longer you wait, the bigger the check's going to be down the road. You're not spending all your income now.
So what would you do?
You're not going to be spending the money then.
Yeah, what would you do with these extra income?
So one could make an argument of taking it now.
And investing it?
Investing it, giving it, doing something with it. Because if he waits until age 70 and dies at age 70 with first birthday.
So no one knows that, right? But what we do know is that the lower your income, the likelihood of it actually being cut is smaller.
Now, Robert, we have on our website, we have a guide, a Social Security guide that goes through, and I think it's a webinar. We have a webinar on Social Security that goes through all this. It'd be worth your time to do it. We also, periodically, we have workshops, Social Security workshops, which could probably be helpful for you as well, just to get a little more. But what you're asking is about legislative risk. Yeah.
But I believe if your income was $200,000 a year, I'd tell you to start taking Social Security immediately.
That's an arbitrary number.
You bet it is.
Yeah, I understand.
You bet it is, right? And the reason is, if they're going to stop benefits, who are they going to stop them to? The people where the Social Security income enhances their lifestyle, or the people that are 100% reliant on the Social Security?
Not the people that are reliant upon it.
Not the people that are reliant.
They're going to have to come up with some other money otherwise.
Right? So who are they going to either
That's Robert's concern. He says, I got pensions of $80,000.
So I guess my number would be.
So you can take it at 62. You can take it at age 70.
Or you can take it in the middle.
Take it at 66.
I'd go with that.
We'll know the right answer way down the road.
Yeah. But I don't know if I'd be in a hurry now, but I certainly would probably take it at full retirement age.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Right. I've had some sleepless nights.
Robert?
By the time my age came, it was going to be pulled out from under me.
Of all the things in life to worry about, I would not have any sleepless nights about whether or not Social Security is going to be there for you. And remember this, next time you have a sleepless night, you're not spending all the income that's coming through your checkbook today. So even in the worst case scenario, which we don't think would happen, that Robert's Social Security check goes to zero, it would not impact your life.
Yeah, and it probably would start being taxed more than it would actually go to zero.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry about that, Robert. Find other things to worry about.
Yes.
If you'd like. Anyway, we wish you well. We see oftentimes at Hanson McLean, people come to us with things scattered all over the place. And they've got this little account here. And sometimes you see someone who's quite technical and they'll have a spreadsheet and have them all listed on a spreadsheet. 14 different accounts, I'm not exaggerating, maybe more.
That they collected over the years.
Someone sold them this mutual fund, and they bought this certain thing, and this was left over from this one employer's account, and this was inherited from June, et cetera. And they'll have all these different, you've seen it right now.
Yes.
And 15, 20 different accounts, they got on a spreadsheet. No, it's not a big deal managed on a spreadsheet.
But your beneficiaries, it makes it harder for them.
And spouse, should something happen, you become incapacitated. So you can still own a variety of investments and have it consolidated. Now, sometimes we still need to have a trust account, maybe an individual account, and an IRA. So you still might need more than one account.
Normally in a family, non-inherited money, you shouldn't really have, in terms of your investments, if they involve stocks and bonds, you should at the outside have no more than five accounts. Brokerage account. Individual IRAs, Roth IRAs, in retirement.
You can have,
during the working simple. Years, you might have as many as seven or eight.
But it just by consolidating them makes it easier. And doing the stretch IRA on a small IRA does not necessarily make sense either.
It's cumbersome. It's a pain in the butt. It really is.
What's that?
A lot of the stretch IRAs, if it's not sizable,
don't bother.
Don't bother.
And not only that, on a required minimum distribution for while we're alive, it's a pretty simple process because every year you just go to the IRS table, you're 74, you go to the IRS table, here's what you take out, now you're 79, you go to the IRS table, here's what you take out. But on a stretch IRA, the rules are such as this. Let's say you're 30 years old and you inherit an IRA or some portion of an IRA. The way the rules work is you need to determine what's your life expectancy at that point in time, according to the IRS. And I'm just going to make up a number here, but let's assume your life expectancy was 45 years. Okay? So your life expectancy is 45 years. Well, what happens is at age 30, assuming it's 45 years, every year you need to reduce your life expectancy by 1 year, which is different
than a life expectancy table.
Yeah, so let's say you're now 50.
You know what's amazing to me, Scott? Okay, finish the conversation.
So now you're 50 and you think, well, how much am I supposed to take out? You can't. There's no table for you to go to look at.
You have to go to last year's
number.
You've
got to go back to what? Wait a minute. How old was I when I inherited this? And that what was my life expectancy at that time? And then I need to subtract the number of years I've been alive since then. So the longer it goes on, not only are you stretching the IRA out, but you're stretching the accounting out as well. And you need to make sure you get good documentation on that, because you mess that up, you don't take your proper required minimum distribution, it's a 50% penalty.
What amazes me is Congress still allows these stretch IRAs. If I was in Congress, I'd say everyone needs to be distributed within 10 years.
Or 5 years.
Or 5 years, whatever. You inherit it. If it's a non-spousal beneficiary.
That's assuming that a tax package, people actually thought through all these different issues. You saw how the last one got rammed through.
That's a pretty good point.
The Republicans shoved it through the same way the Democrats shoved through the...
healthcare.
And I'm trying not being political. I'm just saying
the
reality.
It's you're a realist.
If you want to see the tax bill, you're going to have to pass the tax bill. It was the same thing, the exact same thing.
They'll be different this time.
What's going to be different?
Whatever administration comes into office, they're going to be different.
So different. Anyway, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We are out of time. If you haven't been to Hanson McLean in a while, the website, go visit our website. If you'd like to listen to this via podcast, on our website, there's a way you can subscribe to the podcast. And if you're one of those, I don't really listen to many podcasts, and I'm kind of at a point, I ask my kids for too much help on my iPhone as it is. We've got a little tutorial that I'll show you. Here's how you download a podcast, and you might actually find that you enjoy listening to other types of podcasts as well, which many people do now, and you can get it that way. And it's easy to share, too. You find something interesting, you can just share that podcast right with somebody else. Anyway, we're out of time. It's been wonderful having you with us. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean. Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.